Mapping Project is a vision which encapsulates new work, the commissioning of writers, poets, choreographers, composers, filmmakers, video makers and photographers.
Hello and welcome to Pass Forward, the Wapping Project 20. My name is Gareth Evans. I'm your host for the latest edition of this podcast, looking at all aspects of the Wapping Project, past, present and into the future. We're delighted, this particular episode, to be thinking about the identity of the Wapping Project, the graphic identity, the way that the extraordinary nature and diversity of the Wapping Project's activities over the years has been incarnated on paper and graphically, as I said, in terms of suggesting this huge range of creative possibility. And for that exploration, I'm particularly pleased to welcome Imogen Everson and Sonia Diakova. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Hi, Gareth. Thanks.
Great to have you with us. Now, Imogen, you're coming to us from Sydney, so we already have the Australian connection well established. And Sonia, mm-hmm. we'll find out very shortly that you also had an Australian design connection, although you weren't living in the country. Now, I mention Australia, of course, because our listeners will no doubt be aware that Jules Wright, the late, great Jules Wright, without whom we would not be sitting together across the continent speaking about the Wapping Project, was from Australia. And so this Antipodean connection is particularly pertinent and resonant and poignant, I think, in this particular episode. Now, we have some extraordinary talents to think about with you, our wonderful audience today. And I'd like to thank Thomas and Marta, of course, for making all this possible. We'll come on to the Wapping Project's current incarnation a little bit later. So, Sonia, it would be great to hear now, if we could, about your own first encounter with the Wapping Project, because I believe that you were working, and this perhaps was maybe one of your first professional engagements, with Vince Frost, the London-based Australian graphic designer. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I came to London to look for my dream design job as a very young designer. And I have seen a lot of studios and eventually have met Vince. And he has offered me a position of an intern. So this is how I came to work with Vince in that capacity.
Now, Vince was obviously commissioned to create the original identity for the Wapping Project that was used from 2000 all the way up till the new identity, which you created in 2016, which we'll come on to in a minute. But now you've described, obviously, this significant first encounter with obviously London and with Vince's own practice and then with the Wapping Project. Now, can you remember your first encounter with the building and with Jules?
Very well, yes. It was really quite... overwhelming experience, and the first exhibition that I've seen was sort of something that I have very clearly in my mind, including such details as smell or sort of sensation of cold air when you entered the exhibition on my skin. I mean, it's really literally ingrained in my mind.
Now, we're going to be talking shortly about the identity that you've created in the most recent incarnation of the Wapping Project. But it's interesting that Vince moved back to Australia. So we have a very international connection, as I said earlier in the programme. We're moving intercontinentally. But you, of course, have moved in remarkable ways from growing up in Siberia and then moving to San Francisco for studies and then coming to London. Now, you've mentioned, obviously, London was this transitional threshold moment for you when you really sort of found your direction and kind of purpose. And you moved into a very senior role. You were art director at Frieze magazine in the moments and the years before your creation of the identity for the Wapping Project in its new incarnation. What was it like being in London, and obviously being at the centre in many ways of the British and even in the international art world with your identity at Frieze? How did you find the city and how has it changed for you over the years?
Well, I mean, when I first came to London, just to kind of have a look and see if I can make it here, it really felt like, can I do this? Can I make it? And when I started to work at Frost Design with Vince, it really felt like I'm doing it. You know, it's sort of like kind of a challenge to myself. Can I move from California to England and start again? sort of away from everyone, not knowing anyone in the city. And I think working for Vince and in this very dynamic scene of design in kind of in the center, it felt like it was the center of everything for me. Having worked in San Francisco, where actually at the time the Silicon Valley exploded, and it was, you know, there were a lot of opportunities there as well, but it just, I really consciously chose not to be there, and it was such a breath of fresh air for me to be in Europe. And for me, London was Europe. Ironically enough, you know, we're not in Europe anymore. And the reasons why I came here was because of the proximity of other European countries and how easy it was to travel between them. Yet being in London and sort of in this amazing industry, it, you know, the level of work felt to me very at the very top. And so it was extremely exciting and exhilarating to be in the middle of it. And Vince's studio was just the, you know, it was oozing cool. It was just a very cool time.
No, I mean, you've obviously, you know, made an extraordinary journey from then on. Obviously, you set up your own studio and you redesigned Frieze, of course, you know, a hugely significant publication and operation within the international art world and global culture generally. We'll come on to talk shortly about your redesign of the Wapping Project identity. But I wonder, Imogen, if you could tell us about your meeting with Jules and with the Wapping Project and how the Wapping Project on paper came to be.
Yes, okay. So, well, this was actually my first ever job apart from, you know, sort of cafe jobs as a teenager, etc. But it was my first ever job, if you can believe that. because, you know, where do you go from there? Where do you go after that? You kind of peak. But actually, so this happened, this all began about just over 10 years ago. So I was 23 and I had just graduated from a degree in fashion communication at Central St. Martin's. And so it was around the September, October, and I was job hunting. And I saw a job come up to run the bookshop at the Wapping Project. And obviously as art students, we all knew about the Wapping Project and it was kind of spoken about in these hushed tones, you know, it was a very sort of cult kind of place. So even though I didn't have any experience of working in a bookshop, you know, I just applied, thought that would be a cool place to work. And somehow I got an interview. So I went along to the Wapping Project and I met Jules for the first time. And actually I brought my degree project along with me, which was an illustrated journal of fashion and art called Fauve. And it was very much inspired by French modernists and the ballet russe. So this idea of cross-pollination between the art forms and how you might have a ballet where the fashion was designed by Chanel and the score was by Debussy and Picasso did the set design. So you can already see how that kind of, you know, that lends itself to the Wapping Project. And I brought this along, and then as well as that, it was this also kind of big kind of A3 in size magazine. Very, very kind of sketchbooky, hand done. We had this very inspiring tutor at St. Martin's called Martin Anderson, who runs the Anderson M Design Studio. And at the time, he always rallied against sort of the, you know, the uniformity of design coming out of Max. So he really encouraged us to experiment and sort of use our hands. And so that was the result for me, was my Fauve. And, yeah, very textual, very tactile. And I brought that along with me for some reason. You know, like, not really relevant to the job interview at all, but it was just, you know, look, I did this thing and we talked about it. And I had no expectations. It was just probably like a prop, a safety sort of crutch kind of thing. and then went away. And a week or so later, I got a phone call from Jules, and she said, I'm not going to give you the job in the bookshop, but I want you to make a book instead.
Yeah. Which is, of course, how Jules works, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I didn't know that at the time, you know, and of course I very quickly came to realise that's exactly a sort of Jules commission, that sort of, that instinct, that good faith. I don't know, she sort of sees something I don't know, because obviously I wasn't a book designer, I wasn't a polished book designer, she knew that. But she said, we've always wanted to make a book about the Wapping Project, do you want to do it? So of course I said yes. And then I went back, and she basically pointed me in the direction of the water tanks, the office under the water tanks, mm-hmm. where there was this huge archive of amazing material that basically documented everything about that building and everything about all the projects that had ever taken place in that building with the Wapping Project and before with the Women's Playhouse Trust. So it was just an incredible wealth of material that I had to just figure out a way to start, you know, making something out of.
No, it's tremendously evocative, a meeting that you had, and I love the idea, and our listeners will appreciate that the nature of the first encounter with Jules and how it might go off in wonderful, unexpected directions as you yourself experience. Now, you produced this magnificent limited edition, this box with three parts to it, and so once you'd had a chance to sort of properly look at the archive, obviously it took, you know, some time to create and develop this, and I presume that it wasn't really a financially limited project. It had to be what it had to be, I guess. And how did you settle on the final format?
Well, so basically Jules put me on the payroll there and then. Again, very generous, you know, sort of, again, this is my first job, so this was really sort of setting my expectations a little bit high. She put me on the payroll and she just said, you know, go away and, well, she didn't say go away and do this, but she put me on the payroll and said, go for it, basically.
And it took obviously quite a long time. It was a lot of work.
I can't really remember sort of saying, how the hell am I going to do this? Because you just look around you and it's quite obvious that what you need to do is just create a response to the building. As soon as you're learning about sort of everything that's taken place there, every single project, every single exhibition, every single meal, it's a response to the building. Mm-hmm. So it was obvious to me that I needed to do that. It was obvious from the get-go that it had to be big. Mm-hmm. You know, it had to mimic those proportions, that kind of industrial cathedral. And I wanted to sort of, as well as being a response to the building, I wanted it to be a response to everybody's artwork that had taken place. And I think I write in my introduction that I've got in there how, as I did the writing for it, that was all about found sort of voices, so speaking to people. And then for the design side, it was very much about found imagery. And I suppose that was my starting kind of tenet, really.
Thank you. Now, you mentioned the size of the book, of course. It's significant in its pagination, and obviously, you know, the volumes taken together make a sizable book work. But one of the aspects of the Wapping Project's creativity you were documenting was this idea of performance, of course, which was central to Jules' own life and career, and also to the commissions that she made, as well as, of course, moving image work and sculptural and three-dimensional installations in the building. Now, when you were thinking about performance, of course, there's a very active sense of movement in time and place with performance. And I wonder if you had a particular approach, you know, in terms of the pagination to that, because we're very struck by the scale of the book, as you said, and by the dynamism of the design. But was there any kind of intervention, you know, from Jules about how she wanted things presented once you were up and running?
She was very minimal intervention. I would go to her with my designs and my mock-ups, and she'd kind of say, yep, good, looks good. And so I suppose that must mean that I was heading in, you know, the right direction, because I'm sure she would have told me. But she didn't put any limits on it, and that's so typical of Jules, isn't it? you know, I must have sort of, we must have decided together the size of it, but it was very much like, you know, do it until it's done. We did reach a point, I think I was working on it around the clock for about a year and a half. And it did reach a point where we kind of had to wrap it up. And then it was actually not for another couple of years that it got published, but that's another story.
And let's come on to that a little bit later. Thank you very much indeed for that. So, Sonia, now, if we could think about your redesign or your creation, shall we say, of the new Wapping Project identity for its life after the building. Now, Imogen earlier mentioned this incredible openness, of course, in Jules's commissioning of the book, The Wapping Project, on paper. And she also significantly underscored how the building, of course, was the dynamic for her kind of design intentions, that everything that had happened was always a dialogue with the building, of course, the meals, the commissions, the performances, and so on. Now, you had exactly the opposite, obviously, in brief, if you like, because you had to both incarnate the idea and the heritage of the building, but you also had to propose an identity forward for the Wapping Project that was independent of that architecture. And so I wonder if you could talk us through a little bit how you approach the brief for the new identity, which of course continues to this day across all media and platforms.
Yeah, I can talk about that. I think, you know, we, in a way, when Marta and Thomas has approached me to do the project, first of all, I was extremely honored, and sort of to come back to Wapping Project in a different way, although without the building and without Jules, it was I had to kind of really do it justice, and because the building was so fresh still in my mind, and sort of the spirit of Jules, I was so close to that place. But I also understood that things were changing and there wasn't going to be a kind of that cathedral there anymore. But I think what happened was that we basically found a link that we could take from the building and, as you say, reincarnate it in a new form. So, for example, when Vince designed the identity for Wapping Project, it was made of wood type. And it was set in a very traditional way. And it had everything to do with this kind of industrial approach to design that was linking it to the building. It was raw. It was, you know, it was very, very unique. And it felt very Wapping. When we approached the project, we looked back at the building and were looking at all the machinery and all the sort of energy that is ingrained in that building. We were inspired by the sort of the fact that it's a power station, so it tells you something. It's something that creates energy, and this energy and the pumping action is sort of like a revolving motion. So I'm visualizing, what do machines do? It's a repetitive action. And it's sort of, it led us to the idea of a modular units. So if you look at the machines or like elements in the building, like the roof structure support, the chains that were hanging from the ceiling, every part of the machine, they're made of shapes that are repeating. It's a kind of mechanical units. And when we looked at these sort of the roof support, for example, it had this tilted angles, and that led us to translate it into thinking, okay, what are the tilted elements are there in typography? And of course, it's a kind of italic or, you know, angled letters. So by kind of translating that into typography, we found a way to modify an existing typeface. So it's not that we invented a new typeface altogether. It's actually taking something that was already there, that is quite classic in its look, very functional, and introducing this modular element into it. And so we created the letter W, and then realized that we could use this tilted element throughout the whole alphabet. So then it became a kind of language. And when you would say new film or new project or a new exhibition, in the communication of the Whopping project, there was this tilted element that kept repeating over and over again. So therefore echoing that that repetition, that kind of energy creating motion. So we basically stayed with the idea of a of raw mechanical, something that creates rhythm, something that creates energy. And so it's not apologetic in its look and feel. It's, I think it's forward-looking, and it was enabling Whopping to go forward without the building and without Jules, but in its new reincarnation.
Tremendous. Thank you very much indeed. I'm fortunate to have seen the, you know, the proposal document that you put together, and it really does, you know, suggest that, that rigor and intensity of thinking. And of course, what's great about the mobility within the modular approach is that it suggests the movement that Whopping project commissions have undertaken, of course, both, you know, topographically as well as across media. And so I think it's a great result, and it suggests, you know, again, that openness that that you found in your first meetings and encounters with Jules, of course, and which Imogen has absolutely supported, continues, of course, under Marta and Thomas. Now, Imogen, if we could go back to that moment of a presentation of the book, you did say earlier that it was a whole other story, and now you launched the book, and I believe that was obviously perhaps a very significant moment for you personally, of course, given this was your own incredible first job. But how did that go when the book was launched?
Basically, the lead up to that had been, I think the book had been put on hold because obviously things require money. And I had an email from Jules at one point saying, I've raised the money to publish the book. And what I didn't realise at the time was that was because she'd sold the building. And so actually the publication of the book and the launch of the book ended up coinciding with the closing party.
And so what was the kind of mood and atmosphere of the night then, from your remembrance of it?
A bittersweet combination of celebration and sadness, I think, because, you know, this amazing thing was coming to an end, and I had only come in at the very tail end of, but for most people who were there that evening, it just meant so much to them. It had meant so much to them personally for many years. And you could really feel that, I think, that night. And it was just such a party. There was a red carpet, there was a snow machine. It was in December. Did I imagine a snow machine? I think there was one. There were fireworks at midnight. It was just such a memorable evening.
Yeah, tremendous. No, well, I mean, what a way to obviously mark the great legacy of projects, you know, within the building, and to have this document which, you know, continues to exist and obviously really does incarnate and give a strong sensibility to all the wonderful commissions that took place, you know, in that amazing architecture. Now, obviously, it's very clear for both of you that this encounter with the Whopping project, in whichever way it was for each of you at different times, you know, has been hugely significant and taken you forward. So, Sonia, I wonder if you could think a little bit for us about, in a way, you know, the what you've learned from your encounter, which of course is still ongoing. You're the designer for the current projects, but what in a way that the example of the Whopping project has been for you in terms of how it might impact on your other work?
I mean, yeah, it's spot on to say that it's really a privilege, and you do not see this all the time. It's actually quite rare. And I think this trust that Jules would put into people really invigorates you as a designer or as a person. You know, it's sort of giving you a responsibility, but also, you know, you feel very trusted, and so you trust in your own abilities. And I think that this kind of approach is, it's precious. It's something that teaches me as well how to work with other designers. So by trusting and guiding very lightly, you know, you can get the best out of people, and also makes you appreciate when, you know, there are projects where people start to micromanage. It is so painful. You try to navigate it the best that you can, but it becomes laborious. And so the freedom that we have when we work together, when we can discuss things openly, it's something really invaluable. And I think, you know, trying to think, I think this is something that you look for in other clients and you hope for, but you don't find it very often. And after I have worked with Vince, I have then had a privilege to work at Feiden Press creating books for just a little over 6 years. And after that, I had an experience with Freeze, which then led me to start my own practice and sort of combine all of the previous experiences into one and head my own studio.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, Imogen, if I could close with a similar question to you, really. It's clear, looking at your website, imogeneveson.com, that the Wapping Project on Paper is central to how you think about your own creativity. It's got its own tab on your website, although you are now in a slightly different context working in Australia as an arts and travel writer. But central to your menu bar is the Wapping Project on Paper, and people can follow the story there across all aspects of its creation and delivery. And you moved fairly soon after that party to Australia, and I wonder what you took with you from that experience going forward into your activities now.
Mm-hmm. I think really an expansiveness in approach to projects. I don't think I could ever really be fazed by a project if it was presented to me. You know, I'm never going to say, no, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not possible, because I suppose this project in Jules showed me right from the very beginning of my career that anything is possible, really. I mean, it was also quite a learning curve after that to realise that you're not going to get, you know, like a walking project on paper land on your lap for every job. And another couple of inspirations were definitely Vince Frost's original visual identity for the Wapping Project. I referenced that typography that I think he made on a letterpress printer, the original logo, and just the sort of the strength of that. You know, it was so industrial, but it had this kind of like feeling of erosion at the same time. And so I very much sort of like took that idea and ran with it. And also, of course, Josh Wright and his sort of architectural response to the building and his sort of intervention into that space really inspired me. I remember him talking about how he liked to show the story, show the workings of the building. So he never liked to sort of make something look like it didn't happen. If he had to do up some brickwork, he wouldn't try and blend it in. He would show that he'd been there and he'd done that, but then, you know, the imperfections, basically. And that's another thing that I kind of took on board, and that's why I have these quirky things in there, like on the Richard Wilson page for Butterfly, where he's given me this synopsis of what butterflies about, you can actually see on the back of that he's written my name and the time and date of our interview that we had in the engine room at the Brooklyn Project. And, you know, not that anybody else has to notice that, but I just like that it's there. It's sort of showing the workings of the project. And that was a fun thing to do as well.
Tremendous. Thank you very much indeed. Well, as I mentioned, you can find Imogen's current work and also her response to the experience of creating the Wapping Project on paper on her website, imogeneveson.com. And you can find, of course, Sonia's work with her studio at atelierdiakova.com as well, including, of course, the Wapping Project identity and ongoing design work, which, of course, is celebrated in its entirety at wappingproject.org, where you'll find details, of course, of all the previous commissions, the publications, the history, the archive and the ongoing activities of the organisation in all the ways that you would know how to find. We are part of that story. We are looking at the past and we are going forward through this podcast series, looking at all aspects of this variant and multi-headed and cross-media project that is the Wapping Project, whether it's in the building, across the world, on print, or now, of course, on air. Thank you very much indeed to our audience for being with us, and I do hope you can join me for the next edition. But now, many thanks indeed to Imogen and Sonia for sharing your creative design and identity experiences with us. And thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you will recall earlier in the programme that Imogen talked about applying for the job at the Wapping Project bookshop. She didn't, of course, get that job, but she got to create the book instead. But in a wonderful sequence of events and of podcast programming, we are going to be finding out who did get that job at the bookshop in the next edition of Pass Forward, the Wapping Project 20, where I'll be speaking to Lydia Fulton, manager of the bookshop, and her wonderful colleague Ben Easton about the experience of creating a library, really, of creative possibility, which, of course, was also for sale in the Wapping Project grounds in a very distinctive location, which we will hear about in the next episode. I do hope you can join us for that. Thank you for being with us for this episode, and goodbye.